The marine layer moves in over the skies in Burbank as the sun sets on the West Coast. Brad Friedman, broadcasting live from Los Angeles for Mike Malloy, who is off all this week. I am your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, and now drafted into radio duty. Now your radio guy here for the next week. Covering for Mike while they're off on summer vacation, you can join the chat at bradblog.com where Jeannie Dean and Dez are holding down the fort. I'm doing my best to keep my eyes on it there. And we're going to be rejoined here momentarily by former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who was kind enough to stick with us over the top of the hour news there to take some of your calls and finish up some questions of mine. You can also tweet us, by the way, at The Brad Blog is my Twitter name. You can follow me there. And Kucinich for Prez writes via Twitter, "We stand behind you, Governor Siegelman. The Bush crime family are the true criminals here. The world is unjust. Keep up the fight." And I concur. Governor Siegelman, we were sort of, let's try to reset very quickly here. Your case, your conviction, you were railroaded clearly by the U.S. attorney down there who was the wife of your campaign, of the campaign manager of your opponent running for your second term, Bob Riley, who now still serves. And incredibly, the case that they ran against you included the witness, the star witness who was coached and told what to say, presented evidence that made absolutely no sense, claiming that you took a bribe that wasn't actually a bribe, even if they were correct. This was a reappointing a Republican to a board that he had already been on for three prior terms. And yet the case was upheld by the 11th Circuit Court. Oh, and by the way, yes, when you were convicted, they put shackles and leg irons on you, sent you away to a maximum security penitentiary for 9 months, didn't even allow you to stay out on appeal. Your case is now out on appeal, but was vacated and then remanded to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals by the Supreme Court last week. I hope I wrapped all of that up. Now, Governor Siegelman, how can it be that with all of this information, the 11th Circuit Court in the first place, when you brought your appeal last year, how can it be that they upheld the conviction?
Well, I think, you know, that the 11th Circuit looks only at the record. They don't look at, they didn't look at any of the politics. Although, you know, they had to be, had to have been aware of it. We know that they were aware of the United States Congress House mm-hmm. Judiciary Committee's investigation and report of selective prosecution in my case. But what we have to do now is simply convince the 11th Circuit that we are right on the law.
Well, will they this time around, will they look at the law, whereas before they were looking at the technicalities, was the, you know, were the instructions given properly to the jury and so forth? Now that the case has been remanded to them and the conviction, the judgment vacated, will they actually be looking at these points, Governor Siegelman?
Well, I can tell you, I for one hope they look at these points because it is not only important to my freedom, it is important to every candidate and every elected official and every contributor, because if they can put me in prison for what I did, they can put Obama in prison, his ambassadors in prison, every governor and their contributors in prison if they accept or get anything that they might want. Because the 11th Circuit, in my case, for the very first time that we can find, said that that you don't have to prove an explicit quid pro quo, as the U.S. Supreme Court has said, and those were the rules that we were operating under mm-hmm. for since 1991. But in my case, they said that the jury could infer that there was a quid pro quo from the acts and the actions of the elected official.
Without having actual evidence of an actual quid pro quo, they could simply infer one.
Exactly. But, so if they can do that to me, they can do it to Obama and put him in jail tomorrow.
But the 11th Circuit Court upheld that, even though you made that case and these questionable jury instructions. How can that be?
We actually did not get an opportunity before the 11th Circuit. While we made it in writing,
okay,
we were not allowed in our oral argument, although my lawyer tried desperately to bring it up, we were never allowed to argue that point. And the other point I'd like to make here is that if the prosecutor said once, they said dozens of times before the jury,
yeah,
that I had denied the people of Alabama honest services, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
And I, it is our hope that the 11th Circuit will see this as a case where the prosecution misused their power, misused the language of this statute, not only to get convictions on other counts, which, as you pointed out, have been and should have been and will be thrown out, but also they poisoned the well with the jury with regard to this campaign contribution, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Okay,
So it's my hope that the 11th Circuit will now look at this anew with fresh eyes and will say this case needs to be tossed.
Well,
or at least say we're going to send it back for a new trial, and if we get a new trial, we win.
I just wonder what has changed, because the 11th Circuit had already done away with the honest services charge, and the Supreme Court essentially remanded the case based on this other case, Skilling versus United States, which said that that you can't use honest services fraud unless there is a hard case of bribery or kickbacks, which was not in this case. So I'm still somewhat confused on what it is that the 11th Circuit will be looking at anew here. How will they look at it differently than they looked at it previously?
Well,
Am I making sense?
Yes, you are making very clear sense, and all I can say is that I hope that they look at it with fresh, clear eyes and see that there is no basis in law or in fact for this conviction.
Let me take some calls here. I've been monopolizing the microphone. Sarah from Phoenix City, Alabama. I do appreciate you hanging on so long here to speak with Governor Siegelman. Welcome to the Molloy Show.
Thank you. Hi, Don.
Hello, Sarah. How are you doing tonight?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for your call.
What's up, Sarah? You got a question?
I have followed this case from the get-go, and I was sitting there in the courtroom. There has been a lot of legal technicalities that were wrong. This is a political case against a very good politician from Alabama, and it's a political vendetta case. That's all it boils down to. And I want Don to know that the people, his friends, and the people who understand what this administration has done to him are with him all the way.
Thanks
and we're going to win this case.
Thanks. Thanks for your call, Sarah. I'm gonna let you go just because I want to get in a bunch of callers here if I can while we still have the governor. Appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
All right. Governor, also in the chat room here, I'm told Cambridge Knitter says that she thinks I misspoke, that the 11th Circuit got rid of the bribery charge. Is that right? I thought it was the honest services charge.
No, they got rid of, actually, there's still some honest service charges that remain.
Okay.
There are three charges that were honest service, like honest services, mm-hmm. mail fraud, and honest services, wire fraud, uh-huh. honest services. Something else. I never quite understood what they were to begin with, but the bribery charge does remain.
Okay. Good. I had it right. Jason in Huntsville, Alabama. Welcome to the Molloy Show.
Hey, thank you, Governor Siegelman. I admire you. I've been a long supporter. I heard you speak in Athens back in 2005. I supported you back in the 90s, and I'll just say Alabama doesn't deserve you. You were a great governor. You had some great ideas, and you got me excited about politics as a young man. I want to say I'm very disappointed in the Obama administration. I think you should receive a pardon and get this behind us. But secondly, there's such a hate machine in Alabama, and it really causes me to have a sense somewhat a sense of hopelessness, because the Republican distortion machine is out of control in Alabama. But I do believe that in the end, justice will be done for you, and you're in our thoughts, our prayers, and you have my support, and I wish you well, sir.
Thank you, Jason. Governor Siegelman, where can folks go, like Jason and like Sarah, to support you? DonSiegelman.org?
Yes, or DonSiegelman.com, DonSiegelman.org. And, you know, with the, I'm not begging, but anybody that has some extra change, extra cash that can make a contribution, there's a way to do that on our website. And, of course, the money will go to get my lawyer going, to fuel my lawyer, the engine that will defend me in Atlanta.
Let me beg for you, please go support Don Siegelman. This is costly. This is insane. Don, you and I have been speaking about this case going on 4 years here, and I'll let you go here very shortly, but give me one quick idea, because I know you've got some unique insight. I'm going to be having Judge Vic Rawl from South Carolina on tomorrow night to talk about this insane election on the touchscreen voting systems down there in South Carolina, where Alvin Green, the guy nobody ever heard of, seems to have won. You had a similar incident that is almost never covered when people cover your case here. Tell us very quickly what happened to you and your touchscreen voting machines under the thumb of Karl Rove and friends.
Well, it's another Karl Rove connection. We've talked about the fact that Karl Rove and I have been doing battle since 1994. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the fact that it was Rove's best friend's wife, the U.S. attorney, who brought me to trial during my reelection campaign. We talked about it was Rove's client, the Attorney General of Alabama, who started the investigation. We've talked about Karl Rove's bagman, Jack Abramoff, who put $13 million into the state from casinos in Mississippi to defeat me because I was a pro-lottery, pro-gaming candidate, mm-hmm. and they didn't want competition. But the one thing we haven't talked about is how they actually won or stole the election in 2002. I was getting ready to, after the election in 2002, to enter some of the Southern Democratic primaries for president and leading into 2004. But in 2002, they put a guy down in South Alabama as a ballot security measure. His name was Dan Gans, and he worked for Bob Riley. He went.
I've got just 30 seconds here. As best you can, fit it into 30 seconds.
As best I can, they stole the election by manipulating the outcome. It was a statistical impossibility. Took 5,000 votes from me, gave them to my Republican opponent, and hence I was counted out at the ballot box. And So I said I was going to live to fight again.
You went to bed having won that election, and then they woke you up at 3 or 4 in the morning and said, oh, guess what? We just found some invisible votes on a Diebold touchscreen in, was it Beaumont County?
Yeah, Baldwin County.
Baldwin County.
And the two people who got credit, Karl Rove's partner and the guy that went to work for Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay.
What do you know? What a coincidence. Don Siegelman, that's S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N, DonSiegelman.com or .org. Governor, I really appreciate you sticking with us longer here tonight. Good luck in your fight. I suspect we're going to continue to cover your story, and boy, bless you, sir.
Well, it's not about me. It's about preserving our democracy. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Always my pleasure and my honor to speak with you. Governor Don Siegelman, check him out, DonSiegelman.org. This case will continue. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Your calls for the rest of the hour, 877-520-1150. Some of you folks still hanging on the line. I will get to you and handle those calls as well as I can. Oh, man. And anything else you want to talk about, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Couple more segments here. Stick with us.
One hand is tied to the tightrope walker. The other is in his pants. And the riot squad, they're restless. They need some. The sky is crying.
Sky's crying indeed. 25 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy Show. Your call straight ahead, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. You can keep it going. I know. Yeah. We're taking your calls after the break. I understand. I know how this radio game works. Just because I'm a blogger doesn't mean I can't fake my way through the radio. GAO study finds improper burrowing during Bush years. A study of the Government Accountability Office has found 7 instances of improper burrowing, political appointees shifting to career civil servant positions in a given agency during the Bush administration. Regular TPM Muckraker readers, this comes obviously from TPM Muckrakers, will remember our reporting on burrowing back in late 2008 when several Bush administration officials made eyebrow-raising shifts to career positions. In other words, they burrowed themselves in permanently. The GAO did an exhaustive study of these so-called conversions from political to career positions between May 05 and May 09, found 139 conversions in that period, with the most, 32, occurring at the Justice Department, and the second most, 17, occurring at the Department of Homeland Security. So, the Bush moles, of course, are still in place at the Justice Department, at the Department of Homeland Security. They are like a cancer. They have metastasized throughout the government. But there's a new sheriff in charge. His name is Barack Obama. He has not weeded out this cancer. He is now accountable. And as you heard Governor Don Siegelman over the last hour and a half, he's still allowing these U.S. attorneys, who are political appointees of the Bush administration, to stay in place. What the hell is going on here? Brad, in for Malloy, taking your calls for the rest of the hour at 877-520-1150 on whatever the hell you want to talk about. Stay with us.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you
I would rather listen to that than me, Tony. What do you want? Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in our closing half hour here tonight on the Mike Malloy program, 34 minutes after the hour. Taking your calls momentarily at 877-520-1150. Trying to follow the chat at bradblog.com and your tweets if you want to get me straight to me. Twitter me at The Brad Blog. One point before I go to these calls, I do want to note Alan McDuffie is reporting at Raw Story tonight. A 60-year-old environmentalist activist who hung 2 banners in a government building will be sentenced on Tuesday, facing up to 3 years in prison. Bloomfield, New Jersey resident Ted Glick will be sentenced Tuesday for unfurling 2 banners saying Green Jobs Now and Get to Work from the Hart Senate Office Building's 7th floor into the atrium on September 8, 2009. This is all during the Obama administration. The day the Senate returned from its summer recess is when he hung these banners. Glick and approximately 30 demonstrators were attempting to pressure the Senate to pass the American Clean Energy and Security Act, which passed the House in June of 2009. Despite entering the building legally, following all security requirements, including providing identification and having the banners and other items scanned, Glick was convicted of 2 misdemeanors, disorderly conduct and unlawfully assembling on Capitol grounds on May 13. Glick, who's been married for 31 years, has a 26-year-old son, says he entered the situation fully cognizant of the possible outcomes. He's been arrested more than 2 dozen times for nonviolent protests over the years, telling Raw Story he knew there was a risk. But he thought the most likely scenario would be that the Capitol Police would eject him and his co-protesters from the building, as they did in 2003 when he protested the U.S. invasion of Iraq. One other demonstrator hanging the banners was also arrested but accepted a plea bargain that included probation. But because of two prior misdemeanor convictions also stemming from nonviolent protests, Glick's plea bargain required a 30-day jail sentence. Glick said he was simply unwilling to accept that anyone should go to jail for 30 days for hanging a banner. And yet each of the two convictions typically carries a maximum of 6 months in prison, and the U.S. Attorney's Office has indicated to the judge they will request the sentence be tripled because of the prior convictions. In all, Glick has been arrested 16 times for nonviolent protests, served time in 1971 for resisting the draft, and tomorrow, on July 6th, high noon, he'll face his sentencing hearing. Glick's fate will be handed down by Judge Frederick Weisberg of the Washington, D.C. Superior Court. If you're in Washington, D.C., Glick has said, he would appreciate a big turnout at that hearing tomorrow. That is at noon, if you're in the greater D.C. area. You can read more about it at rawstory.com. We'll see what happens tomorrow, but this is the Bush administration. I'm sorry. Well, this is the Obama administration. Oops. This is the Obama administration. And an environmental activist is now facing 3 years for hanging a banner that says green jobs now and get to work. He's trying to push the Senate to do the right thing, which is to pass climate and energy legislation now. And if it wasn't clear back then when he was trying to let folks know that we need to pass it, do you need any clearer sign than what is happening down in the Gulf of Mexico? Apparently Democrats do. Apparently Barack Obama does, because I can't tell you for the life of me why they are not on television down in the Gulf 24 hours a day, demanding the passage of clean energy legislation now in the U.S. Senate. There will never be a better backdrop to make the case that we need to get the hell off of these fossil fuels and get to something that makes sense. How many people have to die? How many careers have to be lost? And where the hell are the Democrats? Why are they not raising holy hell 24/7 until legislation is passed and signed by the president? I don't get it. There's a lot I don't get. Frank in Los Angeles joins us. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Frank, what's up?
Well, I don't understand why the Obama administration hasn't fired all the attorneys that Bush hired. There's half of them are still working there. Now, I don't trust any of them. You know, usually during a change of administration, they fire all the everybody and they hire all new clerks and attorneys.
They sure as hell do, don't they?
Yeah, and I don't see how Don could get a fair shake, because who's the attorney general? What is it? I can't think of the Halter.
Eric Holder.
Yeah, Holder. Yeah.
Yep.
Why isn't he reviewing this case and overturning it? You know.
He overturned Ted whatever the hell his name is up there, and Ted Stevens up there in Alaska. They dropped that case when they found improprieties in the case, but not this
hell,
one.
Yep. You know?
Thanks, Frank. Yeah. Yep, I appreciate it. Thanks, Frank. I guess Don Siegelman isn't Republican enough to be let go by the Obama administration. Does this sound insane? Does this sound backwards? It is insane. It is backwards. I started out the show tonight hoping I'd feel better by the end of the show. It ain't working so well. Mark in San Francisco, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
How you doing, Brad?
Oh, I'm crappy. You?
Well, I'm the same way.
Okay.
I'm frustrated like you, you know, like especially when you look at an opportunity like the what happened at the Gulf, to use that as a way to destroy the whole Republican ideology of deregulation, Reaganomics, all their you know, ideology has failed and it's destroying the country.
Yeah, but Mark, you know, Obama has, it is destroying the country, and Obama had, what, 15, 16, 17 months in there. He knew what they did. Why the hell didn't he clean out the Minerals and Management Service, the MMS? Why the hell hasn't he cleaned house? And why the hell are Democrats, not Mike Malloy listeners, but the rank-and-file Democrats, why are they still giving this guy a pass?
I don't know, Brad. It's frustrating. You know, the only thing I'm looking at now is when I go to the voting booth, I'm voting against Republican ideology. You know, the Democrats, we have weak candidates in some areas, but the only thing I can do is try to destroy the Republican ideology and keep them out of office. I know we have to clean up the Democratic Party and get some progressives in there, but I'm sure in the hell can't go to the voting booth and vote in any Republicans to try to protest that I'm mad at the Democrats. I mean, that would be ludicrous.
Well, I'm not encouraging that. I just don't know where we go from here. Thanks, Mark. I do appreciate your call. All right, let me go to, Tim in Los Angeles. Is this Tim from L.A.?
Yes, it is, Brad.
Tim from L.A. from the chat room, Tim from L.A.?
Yes, it is, Brad.
Welcome to the show, Tim. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for taking my phone call, Brad.
Sure. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
You know what? Just listening to your show,
yeah.
It's weird. I don't understand the Republican Party because they nailed Don Siegelman, but they also nail Michael Steele, and he's like a, I guess he told the party line, but they're willing to burn him, though. I mean, what is up with the Republican Party? And also, you know, the Blue Dog Democrats, DLC. What is it? Is it money that they want? Is it power they want? Is it, I don't know.
Well, you know what? We're going to have Howie Klein on later this week from Down With Tyranny. I say, and he's a great blogger, and he knows the Blue Dogs, he knows the races, the politics, the horse race crap better than anyone in this country. We're going to have him on. I said, hey, Howie, you want to come on to the Malloy Show this week? He said, yes, if I get to talk about the Blue Dogs. So he's going to be coming on to talk about the Blue Dogs later this week. I can't explain any of it, Tim. I really can't. I don't know what the hell the Republicans are doing. Well, I know what the Republicans are doing. They're evil. They're evil, and they're insane, and they're corporatists, and, you know, they want to run this country into the ground. They want it to be run by the BPs of the world and the corporations of the world, and they want you and me to die and go to hell. They don't care. But what are the Democrats doing, Tim? I'm sorry. No, go ahead. What are the Democrats doing?
I'm protesting, but... But don't they realize that by playing with fire, they'll get burned too?
Who, the Democrats?
So the Republicans.
They got burned once, but it was just singed. It was just a flesh wound. They'll be back in November. Thanks for the call, Tim.
Thanks, Brad.
Appreciate it. Let me get to Suzanne in Albuquerque. Welcome to the Mike Malloy program, Suzanne. There we go.
Hi, Brad. I really have admired your blog and everything for a really long time and really listened to Mike Malloy, and he really gives us a lot of hope. I wanted to say that...
He does? What does he give you hope about? Because I could use some of it.
That there's somebody out there that thinks, you know, rationally and normally, you know, and it's just crazy, like Alice in Wonderland universe that we call America now. And
yes, truth seekers, you are not alone.
I'm going to get the T-shirt anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
But I was in church yesterday, and I was, you know, in Episcopal church, and I was trying to sing the national anthem, and I just got choked up because I just realized how hollowed out everything has become. Mm. And you know, then I went to a barbecue, and some of the people were saying that Glenn Beck is so great, and you know, Obama's so bad, and I mean, how it's really getting hard to be nice to people, you know, that think like that. I think we almost need like some kind of a an amicable divorce in this country, you know, just split it down the middle, or you know, we'll keep the North and they can keep the South, or because it's just gotten so such parallel universes,
yep.
You know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's crazy. I blogged about it over at bradblog.com, I think it was last week. There was a question, the same exact question was given as the reader poll, you know, the viewer poll on Greta Van Susteren's show on Fox and on Ed Schultz's show over on MSNBC. They asked the exact same question, should General McChrystal be fired? This was, you know, before he was fired.
Right.
And on Greta's show, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it was 96% said no, 4% said yes. On Ed Schultz's show, 97% said yes, 3% said no. I mean, it was complete opposites.
Yeah.
We have two countries. This is two Americas. And I don't know how this gets any better. Thanks, Suzanne. I appreciate you checking in.
Thank you so much.
All right. Let me take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to try to fit in as many more of your calls as we can in the time left. But don't worry, I'll be here all week. Tomorrow night, Judge Vic Rawl is going to be with us to discuss what the hell happened in South Carolina and how it could be that he lost to a guy that nobody ever heard of in an election in which not a single vote can be proven to have gone for him or against him. Also later in this week, I will be talking about what happened to me. I got word from the L.A. County Registrar of Voters why it was that the ES&S voting system out here in L.A. County would not properly take my vote again. That's right, Tony. Again. Hopefully the registrar will be joining us to explain himself and our electronic voting machines. And hey, Marcos of Daily Kos. Why don't you come on and explain yourselves as well, now that you found out how important it is to have proper data. We'll talk about that tomorrow night. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Sing it, Lena. All right. Brad Friedman back on the Malloy Show for our last couple of minutes. I should explain that the comment that I made about Daily Kos, about Marcos Melissus. I'll explain it more throughout the week, I suspect. But he had to renounce all of his surveys, the polls that he had been running from Research 2000, because he claims that they were bunk. That apparently Research 2000 was making things up, making up the data, making up the statistics. It was all bogus, and he is suing them, and I believe they will be probably countersuing Kos. This could get ugly, this battle. But what was notable to me was over at Daily Kos, where they refused to talk, frankly, about issues of election fraud, electronic voting, all of the concerns that we have, that I cover at bradblog.com, that you heard Governor Siegelman talking about, where he went to bed having been the winner of the election, woke up and was told that on the unverifiable touchscreen machines, what do you know, the Republicans somehow managed to find thousands of new votes, and he lost the race. Not allowed to talk about that over at the Daily Kos website. They've been banning people for years for having the temerity. And listen, if I'm unfair, hey, I'd love to hear from somebody at Daily Kos. I'd love to hear from Marco specifically. But what he noted when he announced that these polls were bunk and that they were going to be filing suit against Research 2000, here's the quote, the money quote from Marcos. Quote, without full transparency of results, this fraud would not have been uncovered. Well, ain't that ironical? He was, of course, talking about the fraud that was perpetrated on him, he alleges, by his polling company. And it was only because they released a lot of the raw data that statisticians were able to look at it and say, wait, something doesn't smell right here. But when it comes to electronic voting, apparently Marcos has no problem with it all being concealed, with our public elections can be, you know, concealed, completely concealed counting. And, well, he's cool with that. I mean, it makes no sense. But I, you know, I don't want to hit him here without giving him the opportunity to explain himself. Or maybe Dana Houle, his front pager, who has come on and said I'm a nutcase and that I'm a loon for even reporting this, that I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'd love to have him on, too. They can reach me, Brad at bradblog.com. All right, my quickly, my thanks tonight, of course, as always, excuse me, to engineer Tony Sorrentino, who rocks the joint with the killerest music you'll ever hear. Thank you, brother. Producer Desi Doyen out there screening calls as well and manning the chat room along with Jeannie Dean over at bradblog.com. Thank you, ladies, very much. Thanks to my guest, Mac McClellan, Governor Don Siegelman, and, of course, to Mike and Kathy Malloy for going on vacation every now and again and letting me sit in for them. If you're listening, by the way, on MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned after this for Head On with Bob Kincaid. Do I have time for one caller? I'm going to try to get in one caller. Go! Ann, in Madison, Wisconsin, you got 10 seconds. What's up?
Well, hi. I wish somebody would investigate what's going on with Eric Holder and what the Obama and Holder connections are to the old Bush administration. I just think Obama probably couldn't have been elected if he hadn't made some deals ahead of time.
Thank you for your thoughts, Ann. I do appreciate it. Boy, I don't know what's going on. I can't explain it. I really can't. I keep asking questions. I try to figure it out. I'm not one of these, oh, they're both bad, two sides of the same coin. No, I don't believe it. But something is going on. Something stinks. We'll cover it all week. Until tomorrow night, I'll see you at bradblog.com. Good night. Keep it lit.